Thanks, Lynn, and good morning, everybody. It's nice to see a nice full room here. So I hope everybody is comfortable. There are a few more seats up here if anybody wants to get a seat. So I'm a slight disadvantage here in this presentation because actually Laurie Ringert, a colleague at Public Health Seattle and King County, is the one who prepared this presentation, but she couldn't be here with us this morning, hence me pinch hitting and why I've got to then take off after this to go to the other thing I'm supposed to be doing this morning. But it's a really great opportunity to present what we are doing with CDPW in the realm of built environment and then some of the challenges that it's presented to us in figuring out, well, how do we evaluate this kind of process of policy systems and environment change implementation in the context of the built environment. No disclosures. So what we're doing with Communities Putting Prevention to Work, which is a large grant we received from the Department of Health and Human Services and CDC, is to address obesity through healthy eating and active living, as well as tobacco. But I'll focus on the healthy eating, active living component of our work today. And to you apply to this a policy systems and environment change approach, meaning that instead of working on health education or direct program services, we are trying to change the environments in which people live, work, and play so that it's easier for them to lead healthy and active lives. So this particular component of the work is focused on the work we've done with seven cities, Seattle and six suburban cities in King County, to help them incorporate healthy built environment features into comprehensive planning, through complete streets work, and through bike and pedestrian master plans to try to accelerate the process then of building healthy environments at the policy level. CDPW is a two-year stimulus-funded project. We received $25.5 million to implement changes at the policy systems level in this period over 2 years. We'll be ending up officially in March of 2012, although there'll be some activities that extend beyond that period. And it's part of a national $650 million effort that's been shepherded by CDC during this time period. The key challenges and questions that we're trying to look at in our evaluation is trying to better understand how can local governments be agents for change, and how can we help local governments take this policy approach to changing the environments that their citizens and residents live in. And what will it make to take this rather abstract concept of policy systems and environment change to promote health and bring it down to a concrete level at numerous local jurisdictions across King County? So what we really want to try to figure out from our evaluation work is what kind of processes got put in place. How is this actually done in a sustainable way once the CDPW money, which is really a one-time investment, goes away? What kind of surprises have we found as this work is unfolded? Not just whether it's a mechanical process of meeting the deliverables of our contracts with them, but really how did it happen and what can we learn so we can bring this work forward in our communities as well as other communities? What can they learn from our work? So what we started at the baseline, what we found out is that the seven cities were, not surprisingly, at very varying levels of readiness and capacity to implement this kind of complete streets, master planning, changing comp plan kind of work to incorporate healthy elements into it. It's kind of a new way of thinking for some cities. Other cities are much further along in this process. The other challenge was for them is that we were asking them to do multiple strategies, which we'll go into in a minute, to kind of accomplish this work. And the complexity of the work and the range of opportunities available was a little bit confusing at first. And we had to kind of back off in our zealous enthusiasm to do everything all at once and to really try to get a little bit more realistic in what the cities could do. One of the ways we tried to help the cities do this is, and this was a key, I think, part of what we learned and what we did, is to make available technical assistance and support to help the cities move forward on this, because many of the planners didn't have that much experience doing this kind of work, and so we contracted with five other organizations to help provide the TA needed, and this turned into be a very appreciated asset to the communities as they were doing this work. So for example, we had our Cascade Bike Alliance and other biking friendly organizations be able to come out to these cities and talk to them. What does a bike plan look like? How do you make a city more friendly to biking? We have a planning agency, the Puget Sound Regional Council, which is our regional MPO, our Metropolitan Planning Organization, go out to each of these communities and again provide technical assistance. Here's how you change what's written in your ordinances or in your comprehensive plans to make them more supportive of a built environment that supports both healthy eating and active living, and gives them very concrete step-by-step things about how you write the code, for example, in your cities. So it's been a challenging project, and we like challenges. Then the cities ultimately rose to this challenge in a very exciting way. The design of what we're doing was pretty complicated. Local government systems are varied, and so each case is a unique case, although there are common themes across working with them. And the context is really complicated right now. We're in a very fiscally constrained environment, as you're all aware of. And so how do you... one question that constantly comes up is, okay, so you have these great comprehensive plans or bike plans, well, what do you do to actually find the resources to implement the capital changes necessary to kind of make this kind of work happen? And so we're actively grappling with our cities to help them figure out that one, and we're learning as we go along. So we gave a menu to our cities that we're working with of 8 active living strategies and additional healthy eating strategies. But you can see this is a pretty long list of strategies, and we didn't expect every city to do every one, but we wanted to have them have the choice of which strategies were most relevant to them locally, which strategies have the support of their local elected officials, and then to pick among this menu to kind of figure out which ones to make the most progress in. In the healthy eating strategies, there were 9 of them. And again, we wanted to sort of figure out which of them were most relevant to their local context. And you can see it's everything from healthy food policies at internal meetings to updating comp plans to have more local or urban gardening kind of opportunities and everything kind of in between. We also took a different evaluation approach maybe than we have in other projects in the past, where we weren't really interested in evaluating the outcomes per se, although that is part of it, but also to view this as a participatory engaged process. One term for that is developmental evaluation, where the evaluator, instead of being a removed objective evaluator, is very much part of the team implementing this work. So there was a team for each city of the local planner who was engaged in this work, their project officer from our health department, because we subcontracted out much of this work to local health departments instead of keeping it in our health department. And then the evaluator. And this triple team basically was able to understand the work, and the evaluator in this context became both part of implementing the work but also getting in on the ground level to really understand what was happening at a process level, and then doing this across all 7 sites. She became a real asset because she was able to cross-fertilize across the different cities, say, here's what another city was doing. It seems like it's working. Maybe this is relevant to you. So as Michael Patton has said, developmental evaluation tracks the progress of the innovation and provides feedback and helps innovators track progress, track development in real time, and supports evaluation of alternatives. So it's really almost a blending of planning real time with evaluation. And we found this kind of approach to evaluation was actually appropriate for the task at hand. The first challenge that Laurie experienced as the lead evaluator on this project was, how do you even capture what the baseline is to know if we're moving forward? So we didn't really know that much going into this, and there was no systematic way to track what was being done at the policy and systems and environment change level in each of these 7 communities, what had already been accomplished, and what were the gaps. So she developed some tools to help address this challenge. She developed an online survey tool, which basically let each of the sites do a self-analysis of their existing comprehensive plan, and then their self-analysis also of what their internal and external food environments looked like, so we could figure out where they were at and where they were starting from. And so here's an example on your right of kind of the number of communities that had policies and incentives, example, for community gardens in their comp plans. And only 1 did already, 5 did not, and 1 had 1 in development. So through a relatively simple online survey, we're able to capture this kind of information on the current state of affairs. The other thing is that we got feedback from our partners is that they found this a useful exercise to go through because they hadn't really systematically assessed their comp plans, for example, for what healthy community elements were part of their comp plans. So it got them thinking about it a little more systematically. The second challenge was, how do we not overwhelm as evaluators the grantee and the project officer, again, the health department staff, but still provide this kind of feedback in a useful way? And then how do we capture all the great work and challenges that emerged as work unfolded? One way that we found helpful already in doing this is we hosted midpoint and we will host endpoint reflective sessions, so to collect qualitative data on what happened as this work rolled out. And this happened in a couple, for the midpoint evaluations, a couple of different contexts. One was one-on-one, so basically the evaluator sat down and met with the planner and the project officer to debrief and talk about what's happening. Or we offer the chance to meet as a group, meaning that the evaluator go out and meet with not just the planner, who is the point person for this activity, but members of their parks department or their planning department or their engineering department, so they could talk about a group, as a group, what's happening. And the grantees hadn't really had the opportunity or carved out the space to do this type of mid-course reflection as they were implementing initiatives, so they actually enjoyed the process to take stock of what was going on and figure out how is it working and what could they tweak mid-course to make things work better. And then we ended up with a series of midpoint evaluation reports that were distributed to our partners. The other thing that we did was more quantitative, and so Lori amped up this online survey so that every 6 weeks, actually, folks are now checking in. And we couldn't believe they'd actually do this every 6 weeks, but they actually are, because they're finding it useful for the work to self-monitor their progress. So it's a questionnaire basically to sort of check in on what the current status is of developing the policies and systems to change environments based on the 17 objectives that or policy change areas that I outlined further, and a very simple thing about where they are in doing this kind of work. So that's ongoing, and then it gives us and the organization themselves online and immediate feedback on how things are moving ahead. So what have we learned so far, briefly? The cities said that they couldn't have accomplished nearly as much as what they did without having this technical assistance that I mentioned. So having these five agencies who are on tap to come in and help them walk through and develop best practices, write language, figure out the political processes needed to kind of make progress. How do you present to your city council? How do you get your mayor engaged and on board? What are best practices from other cities around the country that we can hold up as examples? This was really, really helpful to them to do this. And we didn't have the expertise necessarily in our health department to even provide this level of detailed technical assistance. So that's why it was great that we were able to bring in folks like the University of Washington, some planning organizations like the Puget Sound Regional Council, the Cascade Bike Alliance, and others to help this process and help our partners move forward. This is a picture of some of our healthy eating consultants from the University of Washington enjoying a healthy meal with their partners. That's where they're showing the food. It's all locally grown. And as they work through some of these processes with their partners. One of the things that we learned also is that before trying to even implement a policy change, it's better to actually do it at a small scale so people gain some concrete real-world experience so they know what this policy is about they're trying to implement. So, for example, trying to get cities online with having healthy food policies at their internal and then their community meetings, the way some of the planners worked this is they started changing the menus and just by bringing healthy foods to this meeting, and people kind of said, oh, this is a good way to have food at meetings. Why don't we make a policy to make this the rule rather than just have it happen on an ad hoc basis? So it was kind of doing that kind of real-world experience helped people see what they were trying to do. Another thing is we learned a lot about framing and messaging so far through this process. And we felt that we've learned that going to city councils or going to other departments and talking about health or healthy food was not the best way to kind of get the message across. But talking about quality of life kind of issues, talking about giving people choice and access to options, reframing into economic benefits so that if you want to attract businesses to your community, you want to point out that it's a sustainable community or a livable community. Those values resonated more than talking straight about health or healthy communities necessarily with folks. And so that was a good way to help that we learned to help reframe our message. Another thing that we were happy to see happen, and that a number of mayors actually commented on to us, was that they've had a hard time getting their departments to get out of their silos and talk to each other. Parks, talk to transportation, talk to engineering. And so actually through this work, they've actually had that opportunity to have the staff to facilitate this cross-departmental kind of dialogue and to sort of bring this notion of healthy policies to more departments. And this really started at the beginning, just doing the baseline assessment, when the evaluator and the project officers actually ended up talking across departments and bringing people together to initiate this dialogue. Another thing that was maybe surprising to us a little bit as public health folks, because of the value and premium we place on community engagement in our work, is that many of the cities have not done much community engagement around planning and land use design kind of issues. And so by getting out into the community and doing walking audits or bike audits, or engaging in community listening sessions as part of the process brought to the table by public health, the planning departments really said, oh, this is actually a great thing. We like engaging with our communities. And so it helped them do kind of a shift a little bit about how they viewed community engagement. So we found out that that was a useful part of the work so far. And then we've also found that innovative ways to help the cities kind of achieve their goals and build their capacity that aren't even directly related to the health and planning goals. So for example, we helped one city develop their social media and their web-based presence, not just for the healthy planning stuff, but for the city in general. And so we found that by approaching the cities and working with them, there were actually many co-benefits that weren't strictly health that the cities found of value, and that increased their receptiveness to working with us on the health work that we're doing. So what are the challenges that have emerged so far in doing this work? We found that the complexity of moving multiple policies through simultaneously, particularly in smaller suburban cities, is a lot, and that we had to back off and slow down the pace and change some of the deliverables in our contracts with them, and that was just fine. We found that a lot of coordination needed to happen because of all the different players that are needed to make these kind of policy changes happen in these cities, and that we needed to educate the decision makers, the policy makers, the influencers, and bring them along and have a lot of one-on-one discussions with them and dialogue, and that the time spent on developing these relationships was critical. And even though it took a lot of time on public health department staff and on the front point person for the city who was working on this, that was well repaid. And it's invaluable to kind of develop these relationships. So has the approach that we've taken, this sort of process developmental approach, been useful as opposed to maybe a more traditional outcomes-oriented approach on evaluation? I think it has been, as what Laurie's telling us. The grantees developed some skills in self-evaluation and how to use this to make mid-course changes. And we're getting a lot of great information that we're going to actually be able to extract some cross-cutting themes about what goes into being able to make these kind of changes and what works, what were the challenges and how are these overcome, and hopefully some of this information is generalizable. It's become a much more interactive process. The evaluator has been able to actually bring in best practice ideas, not just evaluation ideas, and it's really been helpful to develop creative approaches to evaluation because it's really been a participatory approach to doing this work. So I'll finish up here by saying that we've learned something about how to engage local governments to be change agents for health. We've learned a little bit about what it can take for local governments to do this work in the real political context and fiscal climate they find themselves. And we've been able to develop innovative approaches to developing these complex processes and evaluating them. And we've also learned how public health has to change the way it does business if it wants to be a good partner to the local governments that we're working with. So thanks for your attention here. And now I think we have a few minutes to engage in some dialogue. Yeah. Yeah, we have two websites. One, you can just go to Healthy Communities King County, and that's our more community-oriented website. And the other one is if you go to just Google Public Health Seattle and King County and go to our CPPW, Communities Putting Prevention to Work webpage, then there's more information there as well. Yeah. Good. Any other comments, shared experiences about trying to do this work in your communities? Yeah.
Changes or definitions to improve.
So the question was, did we share the midpoint evaluation information with the cities and the planners so that they can make adjustments right away in their work? And the answer is yes. Actually, with each site, we reviewed the mid-course evaluation findings. We had them discuss with us what they thought that meant for the way their work was going. And then based on that, if there were any changes that they thought they'd want to make or that we thought might be useful, we kicked that around. And then we were fine with altering the grant deliverables, the subcontract deliverables, to reflect that discussion.
Jim, did you have issues in the fiscal climate where some city or state employees just were, their jobs were just gone in the middle of this process? So partners who might have been working with, and then they're just dropping out of the picture and not there anymore?
So the question is, given the current fiscal crisis that many local governments are facing with job layoffs, et cetera, were there personnel changes mid-course that kind of complicated the work? And the answer is yes. So the good thing is that the planners actually were supported by these stimulus funds. So they're there through the whole process, and so they were the continuity through the whole thing. And actually, the cities were really appreciative because they probably would have had to lay off these planners if it hadn't been for stimulus. So stimulus is making jobs, and it's keeping people employed. Yeah.
When would there be any health impacts from a planning process like this?
So the question is, when will we actually see some health impacts based on a planning process? This is long-term work, and this is long-term investment in communities. So most of you are probably familiar with a comp planning process, but that rolls out over many years. So we're at the stage now where the comp plan final revisions are not due till 2014, for example, although before that and prior to that, the cities are free to adopt complete streets ordinances and bike and ped plans. So by 2012, we will have these cities pretty much all have adopted complete streets ordinances and bike and ped master plans. So then the next question is, once you've got these great things in place as a policy, how do you implement? So we are actually working with the cities now to help them apply and change actually somewhat the funding criteria for our Metropolitan Planning Organization. For those of you who are planners know what MPOs are, but they control the distribution and allocation of federal highway dollars and transportation funds through their regions, to increase the proportion of those funds that go to provide non-motorized support for non-motorized infrastructure projects like bike paths and sidewalks and walking trails. And then also to synchronize their granting process with what's been adopted by these cities. So hopefully we'll see some change and flow in funding in 2013, 2014. And so then the bricks and mortar stuff hopefully will start happening 2014, 2015. And then the whole question, which I think is still a big unknown in this whole arena of built environment, is if you change the built environment, do people walk more and bike more and get more active? We don't know the answer to that question. All we have primarily in this field now is cross-sectional data associating certain types of built environments with certain types of behaviors. There's very little to no data saying if you change that environment, do people change their behavior. So stay tuned for the next decade. I mean, this is a massive undertaking that we're all involved with here. Okay, thanks very much for your attention. Sorry.